Radio Prague International, the external service of Czech Radio. News.
Students from Charles University are holding an occupational strike at the university's main headquarters, Karolinum, demanding the resignation of the university's rector, Tomáš Zima. The Speaker of the Czech Upper Chamber, Jaroslav Kubera, has defended the Senate's raison d'être, and the Prague City Transport Company is gearing up for freedom celebrations at the weekend. Students from Charles University launched an occupational strike at the university's main headquarters, Karolinum, on Wednesday night, demanding the resignation of the university's rector, Tomáš Zima. They filled the main entrance hall of the university headquarters, refusing to budge despite Zima's efforts to defuse the tension. The student protesters hold Zima responsible for a number of managerial failings, including the university's controversial partnership agreement with consumer lender Home Credit, which is known to support the Institute of Václav Klaus, a vocal denier of climate change. Following a wave of criticism, the company withdrew from the deal, but students say the rector is no longer trustworthy. They're refusing to leave the premises until he resigns. The Senate is an essential part of the system of checks and balances, a guarantor of the constitutional order and a defender of democracy, the Speaker of the Czech Upper Chamber, Jaroslav Kubera, said at a ceremonial gathering in the Senate marking the return of freedom to Czechoslovakia 30 years ago. Senator Kubera said it was important to defend the Senate's raison d'être and refute the arguments of some politicians who claim it is expensive and redundant. The Speaker of the Senate noted that although the Upper Chamber is made up of senators from different parties and independents, it would always defend the basic values of a liberal democracy, such as personal freedom and responsibility. A panel exhibition on the 30th anniversary of the Velvet Revolution opened in the seat of the European Parliament on Wednesday. The exhibition of photographs documents the events of 1989 as well as the 1968 invasion of Czechoslovakia and the harsh normalisation period that followed the crushing of the Prague Spring reforms. European Parliament Vice President Dita Charanzová, who co-organised the exhibition together with Slovak MP Monika Beňová, said looking back at the years of totalitarianism was important so that young people would realise that freedom cannot be taken for granted and must be protected and nurtured. A Prague state attorney has filed charges against former Transport Minister Vít Bárta and former counterintelligence officer Jan Petržílek in connection with information leaks of police wiretappings of conversations between former Prague Mayor Pavel Bém and influential Prague businessman Roman Janoušek. Vít, who once owned the biggest detective agency in the land, is believed to have persuaded Petržílek to leak the incriminatory wiretappings to the press for political reasons. The wiretapping suggests that the then mayor of Prague, Pavel Bém of the Civic Democrats, was a mere puppet in the hands of the influential lobbyist. Both men have previously been investigated in connection with the case. They denied any involvement in the matter. The Prague Public Transport Company has announced a series of changes in city transport in connection with the upcoming 30th anniversary of the Velvet Revolution this weekend. In connection with a planned demonstration at Letná, which is expected to draw approximately 250,000 people on Saturday, the transport company will boost metro connections to the area as well as trams in the vicinity. On Sunday, it will reduce the number of trams in the city centre and reroute some of them in order to clear the way for street celebrations, including a procession following the route of the student demonstration which launched the anti-communist protests in 1989. And finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. Friday should be clear to partly cloudy with day temperatures reaching 11 degrees Celsius. I'm Daniela Lazarová, and that's the end of the news.
Hi, this is Radio Prague International with me, Ian Willoughby. Today, broken-up Jewish tombstones were used to pave the streets of central Prague. But now those cobblestones are to gradually be removed. We take you to another spot in Prague linked to the Velvet Revolution, the Federal Assembly building just off the top of Wenceslas Square. And later, we meet Barbara Day, a UK expert in Czech theatre, who was also involved in the underground university of the 1980s. All that's coming up in today's programme. The undignified use of pieces of ancient Jewish tombstones as cobblestones in Prague's pavements should soon come to an end. Under a memorandum to be signed between City Hall and the Jewish community of Prague, any such stones discovered during repairs or other excavation work will be handed over to the latter. Tom McEncroe reports.
The streets in central Prague are typically cobblestoned. However, many such pavements in the pedestrian zone at the bottom of Wenceslas Square seem to have in fact been made from pieces of Jewish tombstones taken from a derelict 19th century Jewish cemetery, possibly during repairs ahead of Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev's visit in 1987. A new memorandum between the Jewish community in Prague and City Hall, which the two parties are expected to sign in the coming weeks, will seek to gradually remove those ancient gravestones by making it a rule that any such cobblestone found during excavations be handed back to the Jewish community. The head of the Jewish community, František Banaj, says the memorandum is currently just a proposal prepared by the legal office, which has been reviewed by City Hall representatives, and that therefore its final word is not yet clear.
I expect that it will result in an agreement with Prague's Technical Road Administration. Under it, during any excavation work, the investor will have to set aside such stones when they come across them, or invite a member of the Jewish community of Prague to the site.
Owned by the city, the Technical Road Administration is in charge of maintaining Prague's roads and streets. Any alterations to Prague's pavements need to be first agreed to by the organisation, which then sets out the conditions that have to be met. Earlier this year, the mayor of Prague 1, Pavel Chizinski, suggested the symbolic placement of information plaques along Napřikopje Street, where many of these cobblestones were found. This idea has since been dropped, Czech television reports. Mr. Banaj says the Jewish community is already decided about what it will do once the stones pass into their ownership.
Supposing that we find any such cobblestones, we'll first have to see how many there are and if we can find any information from them. In any case, we want to place them at the old Jewish cemetery in Žižkov.
He says that although the cubes cannot be remade into tombstones nor returned to the original cemeteries, they should be honoured through such a symbolic act. However, in his opinion, the whole affair has become a sensation, overblown by the media, and there are issues of greater necessity that deserve attention.
More important for us are the things that we can still fix. That means maintaining current cemeteries or those that can still be repaired. There's still a deficit ranging in the tens of millions of crowns in this regard. We also want to focus on those synagogues that can still be repaired, as well as social care for elderly survivors. And that report was by Tom McEncroe. As the anniversary of the Velvet Revolution draws ever nearer, we take you to places that are closely associated with the events that led to the collapse of the communist regime in 1989. In the fourth episode of our mini-series, we visit the former Czechoslovak Federal Assembly building, which was where some key political changes took place 30 years ago. Ruth Frankova has more.
The glass and steel building of the former Czechoslovak Federal Assembly is located just off the top of Wenceslas Square, across from the Neo-Renaissance National Museum. It was here where some of the groundbreaking political decisions took place, sparked by the student demonstration on Národní třída on the 17th of November 1989. One of the people involved in the revolutionary events was student leader Václav Bartuška, who currently works as the government's Special Commissioner for Energy Security.
Our main requirement on the first day of the general strike was to appoint an inquiry committee for the events of November 17th. We also called for the abolishment of the constitutional article that guaranteed the Communist Party the leading role in our society. On November 29, 1989, here in the Federal Assembly, the Parliament really voted in favour of our demand.
As someone who took part in the student demonstrations leading up to the events of November 17th, Mr. Bartuška already had his own experience with interrogation by the STB, the notorious communist-era secret police.
There were several demonstrations taking place since August 1988, and all of them had more or less the same scenario. Either we were detained or beaten. But I didn't have a clue at that time that something was about to happen, and neither did any of my colleagues.
Mr. Bartuška was last interrogated by the secret police on November 19th, just 2 days after the brutal crackdown on students on Národní třída. Only 10 days later, at the age of 22, he was appointed head of a special parliamentary committee to investigate the violent events of November 17th and became the first person to be given access to the secret police files. Some of the members on the committee were the existing communist deputies.
They had to cooperate with us because we were representatives of the student movement, which had the support of a large part of society. There were mass demonstrations taking place in Prague and all around the country. Nearly a million people showed up at Letná Plain, and a general strike took place on November 27th. So the communists had to take us seriously, whether they liked it or not.
Apart from the abolition of the constitutional article, which officially ended the communist rule in Czechoslovakia, other key moments also took place at the Federal Assembly building.
The dismissal of the federal government and both Czech and Slovak national governments, and the election of new parliament leadership, and the appointment of Alexander Dubček as the head of the Federal Assembly. There was also the co-optation of the new MPs in December 1989, and the preparation of free elections in 1990.
Mr. Bartuška says that although student leaders were present in most of the negotiations, the key role was played by the civic forum headed by Václav Havel.
I think that what happened in November and December 1989 was a capitulation of the Communist Party. We expected some negotiations to take place, but they basically just left their posts, at least most of them did.
In 1995, the Federal Assembly building was handed to US broadcaster Radio Free Europe. In 2009, it became part of the National Museum.
Ruth Frankova. And tomorrow we'll take you to one final spot in Prague connected with the Velvet Revolution. But now, Barbara Day is a British writer, translator and lecturer. She's written many articles and academic papers on Czech theatre and has been coming to this country since the mid-1960s. Her insights into the role of theatre in the years that preceded the fall of the communist regime in 1989 give a unique perspective on the period. Her book, Trial by Theatre, will soon be published by the Carolinum Press. And Azadeh Kangarani spoke to Barbara Day.
Tuesday, 19th of October 1965. The air is hazy and yellow under the gas lamps in the nested streets of mysterious, baffled city, Prague, in one of the Eastern Bloc countries, Czechoslovakia. Since 1948, Czechoslovakia built up its invisible boundaries and surrounded itself with its iron curtain like the other communist states. Communist rules spread the grey colour not only on the facade, but wrap and roof of this country. Here, outside, in front of the Art Nouveau building of Prague Main Station, a young 21-year-old British girl has just arrived in the city. I am Azadeh Kangarani, and you're listening to A Stage for Revolution.
Right now I'm at Barbara's flat in Prague, which has parts of its windows facing the beautiful nature of Stromovka Park in Prague 7. And almost the whole living room's walls are covered by the shelves of books. There she comes. Thank you, Barbara.
Not at all.
Lovely.
This, I think, is yours.
Thank you so much. The tea smells good. Thank you. So shall we start?
When you're ready.
Sure. Barbara, you came to Prague at a time that communism had strong roots in this country. You didn't know anything of their language and people didn't know that much of English. So how did you communicate?
How did I communicate? Well, those people who did know English were very keen to speak it. And I found quite a lot of people who were friendly and helpful and wanted to introduce me to people and to the theatre especially. My first experience at DEMU, I was registered to study it. And that was not such a good experience because they said, we don't know what to do with you. You're only here for a year. We don't have a programme for you. Oh, well, you can go and watch some rehearsals.
Uh-huh.
And they sent me out to Libeň, which was a long, long, cold ride on the tram every morning, 10 o'clock for the start of rehearsal. And the only person who spoke English there was the prompter.
What other theatres did you go to?
One of the first ones that I went to for a performance was the Theatre on the Balustrade. And, of course, they were doing plays like King Ubu and plays by Beckett and UNESCO and new plays by Václav Havel. I really started at the very top, right at the beginning.
And which director had the most influence on you at the Theatre on the Balustrade?
That was Jan Grossman. I was told by one of my friends there that I could have a meeting with Mr. Grossman, and he's a very important man. You must be quite clear about what you want and not take up too much of his time. So I was quite nervous when I went to meet him. And I just discovered a wonderful man who was very, very willing. His English was beautiful. At this time, I'd only just finished my studies, and he talked to me as though I was an important colleague and someone from the English theatre. I felt so at home with him.
Can you tell me more of your experience while you were observing the production of Jan Grossman at the Theatre on the Balustrade?
I was very lucky because I arrived in 1965, and in 1966, Grossman started to rehearse Kafka, The Trial. I didn't know Kafka and I didn't know The Trial, so I had to get hold of an English copy of the novel. But I saw how he took the scenes and treated them rather like anecdotes on stage. It was so very clearly the atmosphere, the environment of Prague, because he used a set that was built of scaffolding. And people who remember the 60s, well, 60s, 70s and 80s, Prague was just covered with scaffolding. The whole place was falling down. There'd been no repairs to the buildings. So everywhere you went, you came across scaffolding, and this was the perfect set on the little stage at the theatre on the Balustrade.
What is Kafka's Trial about?
Well, the play focuses on a man called Joseph K. And K wakes up one morning and finds he's been arrested, but he doesn't know what it's for. So he spends the rest of the time trying to make sense of it, trying to find out what he's been arrested for. But what Grossman really identified in The Trial was that Joseph K. always accepts his guilt. He doesn't shake them off and say, no, go away, I'm not guilty. In a way, he becomes part of his own guilt. It was something that Grossman was trying to say about the way ordinary people can behave, so that you could see that what was happening to K. could happen to anyone. You could just get sucked into this world of judges and trials and blame and guilt.
So he was referring to the situation of the time in 60s by this production, right?
Yes, he was referring to his experience of communism, mm-hmm. or of anyone under any kind of totalitarianism, and how people accepted the rules of mm-hmm. society.
Well, in that time, the country was somehow isolated. Was there any connection between the Czech theatre community and the outside world?
Well, they were beginning to get connected. People were coming from abroad to Prague and seeing this really very interesting theatre. And they were being invited to festivals.
And was there any connection between the theatre of Czechoslovakia and Britain in that time?
Yes, about the same time as I was there. There were people like Martin Eslin, who was with the BBC, and Kenneth Tynan, who was a journalist. And they began writing about the theatre. And in fact, the first plays by Václav Havel to be performed in Britain were performed on the radio on the BBC. I was mentioning festivals. There was a festival that had been started in the middle of the 1960s by a man called Peter Dobny, and he was particularly interested in the Czech theatre. He invited the Theatre on the Balustrade twice, Theatre Beyond the Gate twice, the Činoherní klub.
And were you involved?
Well, again, just sheer luck. In 67 and 68, those were the years that Theatre on the Balustrade came. I was an interpreter, though my Czech was still not so good. But what it really meant was that I could be backstage and watch them.
Were the British audience interested in Czechoslovak theatre because of its artistic qualities, or was it because of some political interest?
I think with the British audiences, what they were originally interested in was just purely the artistic quality, the fascination of this kind of theatre that was so different from what they were used to, that was more traditional and conventional. And then they began connecting it to the politics, especially as the Prague Spring came along, because as the politics was more in the international news and became more tense, the British people became more involved, and those who were in the theatre did care very much about what was happening to their colleagues in the Iron Curtain countries and Czechoslovakia, especially at this time.
We appeal to all radio stations in Romania, Yugoslavia, please inform about the situation in the Czechoslovak Socialist Republic. Please let the whole world know the truth.
August 21st, 1968. At night, 500,000 invading troops from Warsaw Pact countries, the Soviet Union, the East Germany, Bulgaria, Poland, and Hungary, crossed the borders of Czechoslovakia. This was just the beginning of the occupation of the country. The occupation was provoked by an attempt by Czechoslovak reformers to build a human face for socialism. But Moscow immediately proved there is no human face for socialism. Barbara, how did Prague Spring affect the life of the theatre practitioners?
When the invasion came, no one knew what was going to happen. The following year went past. All the people that I'd known were actually losing their jobs, were no longer able to work in the theatre. So gradually, over the 1970s, for several years, I lost touch with many of the theatre people here. Many playwrights, their works couldn't be performed, and they were even taken out of the history books. Not only could you not write about them anymore, you couldn't even read what had been written in the 1960s.
Let's talk about Václav Havel, because later he becomes politically more important in the country.
Yes, of course. Well, he was much more political than someone like Jan Grossman, and he was involved in lots of activities that the authorities thought were dangerous. So his plays absolutely could not be performed. And what he began to do at this period was to write a different kind of play. He was writing plays for his friends to perform. So they didn't have large casts intended for big theatres or intended for any theatre. They were to be played in, you could play them in the garden or in the living room.
How did the British audience react to Václav Havel's plays?
Martin Eslin from the BBC had broadcast some of his plays. Gradually, people had moved on and forgotten about Havel. But it just so happened that in 1977, Sam Walters was going to put on one of the Vaniek plays for the first time. And purely by coincidence of timing, it was when the news came out about Charter 77 and Václav Havel was on the radio and on the television. There began a kind of movement among people who knew about Czechoslovakia and who knew about Havel to try and support his work. Samuel Beckett was one of them. Samuel Beckett wrote a play dedicated to Havel, which was put on in 1984 during the celebration of George Orwell's book.
From 1968 onwards, Czechoslovakia was on a political roller coaster. Indeed, it affected their relationship with the Western Bloc. But in 1977, something happened that turned back the attention onto Czechoslovakia. Charter 77. It was a criticism of the government for failing to implement human rights in the country. The founders of Charter 77 included some of the important Czechoslovak politicians, philosophers, musicians, artists, and writers. Many theater practitioners were banned from practicing their profession in theater. Barbara, how did Charter 77 affect the life of artists?
Well, for artists in general, what happened was that after the invasion, many of them had to sign that they agreed with the invasion. And those who didn't sign this document very often lost their job, couldn't work anymore in the theatre. Everything was under the control of the Communist Party.
Let's get back to Václav Havel again. He was out of the British spotlight for some time. Then after Charter 77, the spotlight was back on him again, right?
It was a different kind of spotlight. The first spotlight had been the theatre spotlight. But then he became known for his political activity, and that was why he was banned from publishing, banned from writing, banned from travelling. In the beginning of 1977, he was one of the spokespeople for the Charter 77, which was a petition to the government to carry out all the promises that were originally made and was now no longer performing.
Did British people support Charter 77?
There was interest in this political movement in England, and interest especially that there was a playwright involved and that he was one of the leading people in it.
How did Václav Havel's political and theatrical life go on in the 70s?
He became more involved in political work and more in conflict with the authorities. And it culminated in the imprisonment, or the trial, of what was called the Committee for the Defence of the Unjustly Prosecuted. And he was one of the seven or eight people who was put on trial and given a prison sentence of several years. So in 1979, he was sent to prison, I think, for about 4 years.
Perhaps some other artists were in trouble as well.
Well, there were hundreds of directors, theatre directors, actors, dramaturgs who were punished in the 1970s for having been part of the Prague Spring Movement. All kinds of different punishments. Some of them were not allowed to work in Prague anymore. They could only work in the provinces. And others couldn't work on radio or television or couldn't make recordings. Filmmakers like Evald Shaum were not allowed to work in film any longer, only in the theatre, and then only as a guest. A lot of it was nothing to do with political reasons. It was just bureaucrats trying to get their own back on these upstart artists. Then there was the actress Vlasta Chromostova, who wasn't allowed to work in the professional theatre anymore. She began to perform in her living room. There was a version of Macbeth that became very famous, but it was for friends, not approved, of course, because it was in her living room. So the police would come and raid it and ask what she was doing, and wasn't it illegal?
So after all this time that everything was more or less under pressure, were you following all these events, the life in the theatre?
Well, in the 1970s, I wasn't really following things very closely because I'd given up hope of finding any practical work in the Czech theatre. And I worked in the theatre in Britain and did other things. And then in 1979, it was when Václav Havel was put in prison. Well, I was totally shocked that someone that I'd known, that this could happen and for so long. I knew that theatre of the 1960s couldn't be written about any longer in Czechoslovakia. But I thought, I'm in Britain, and I've got all my memories, and there is something I can do. I registered at Bristol University to write my dissertation, and that was the point when I registered to write about the theatre on the balustrade and the small theatres in Czechoslovakia.
In the next episode of this interview with Barbara, we will discover more about what happened in the 70s and 80s and how theater continued to build up its role to get to the point of the Velvet Revolution in 1989.
Barbara Day. Tomorrow, in the second part of this two-part interview with her, we'll discover more about what happened in the 70s and 80s and the role of theatre in the run-up to the Velvet Revolution. But I'm afraid that's all we've got time for in today's programme. Please send any comments you might have to english@radio.cz. And you'll also find us, as ever, on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. But for now, from me, Ian Willoughby, and everybody here at Radio Prague International, thanks a lot for listening, folks, and speak to you soon.